This is the Lockheed Martin F-35. It is designed with 418 kilograms of rare earths, which are embedded in its weapons, lasers, and engine. An Arleigh Burke destroyer needs about 2,600 kilograms, while a Virginia-class submarine uses nearly 4,600. Different systems, but they all lean on the same elements. Neodymium, praseodymium, samarium, dysprosium, and terbium. To most people, these names mean little, but to defense technologies, they mean everything. And yet, nearly all of these elements trace back to China, the undisputed leader in rare earth supply chains. Around 85% of rare earths are refined there, and the country produces more than 90% of the world's rare earth magnets. Automakers, aerospace manufacturers, semiconductor companies, and military contractors around the globe rely on these metals. Without them, most modern devices would either fail to function or operate far less efficiently. For the defense sector, the risks are even greater because, in some shape or form, the world's strongest military now rests on its rival's supply chain. Speaking of minerals, gold and silver are having a breakout year. As trade wars, tariffs, and debts pile up, more countries are moving away from the US dollar. The result is a quiet monetary shift, with investors and central banks turning to one timeless asset, precious metals. Exchange-traded funds have made gold accessible to millions. You can buy shares that represent gold without touching the metal itself. But this system has flaws. Many investors doubt that they're fully backed by real gold. Others can't access them due to local restrictions, and very few offer transparency. This is where today's sponsor, StreamX, comes in, ticker symbol STEX on the NASDAQ. It's a new fintech company aiming to revolutionize how people own and trade gold. Here's how it works. First, every ounce of gold on StreamX is real, vaulted, audited, and insured. So you actually own physical metal, not just paper claims. Second, StreamX makes that gold productive. Holders can earn yields while still retaining ownership, turning an idle asset into an income-generating one. And third, StreamX operates on blockchain technology, allowing users to buy, sell, or transfer gold instantly from anywhere in the world. This approach could do to gold ETFs what Netflix did to Blockbuster: take an outdated system and rebuild it for the digital era. Backed by billionaire Frank Giustra and with over $1.1 billion in funding led by Cantor Fitzgerald, StreamX is preparing to launch its first product soon. If you believe the next financial revolution will merge tangible assets with digital access, check out StreamX, ticker STEX on NASDAQ. It could be the next big step in how the world owns gold. Just make sure to do your own due diligence. Despite the name, rare earths are actually quite common. Most are scattered all over the Earth's crust. The key is finding large concentrations that can be mined at an economic scale. Even then, turning them into usable materials is a complicated, dangerous, and highly polluting process. That's why most countries choose to stay out of the industry altogether. The environmental costs are just too much to bear. China is home to the world's largest rare earth deposits. Some of the major mining sites include Bayan Obo in Inner Mongolia, Mianing in Sichuan, Weishan in Shandong, and several more in Jiangxi province. From these mines, ore is shipped to refineries in Longdan, where contaminants are removed. The refined rare earths are then sent to magnet factories near Guangzhou. Those same magnets end up in everything from wind turbines to electric vehicles, including models made by BYD and Tesla. However, long before China, it was America that stood as the world's biggest rare earth producer. For decades, most of the global supply came from the Mountain Pass mine in California. But in the 1980s, the US began to lose its edge. stricter environmental regulations and higher operational expenses started to weigh on US mining companies. Processing rare earths became increasingly more costly, making domestic production less attractive. As a result, the industry was pushed overseas, often with the blessing of US lawmakers. By 1996, America had outsourced so much that Congress shut down the US Bureau of Mines, the government's leading research agency on the issue. Meanwhile, as the US stepped back, China picked up the slack and learned the craft. It accepted the environmental burden and channeled massive resources into developing its rare earth industry. Low labor costs and lax environmental standards gave Beijing the advantage it needed to expand its hold on the market. By the 2000s, new technologies had sharply lowered production costs. At the same time, China used export incentives and tax breaks to push down global prices, thereby undercutting international competitors and discouraging investment in alternative supply chains. The result was dominance. By 2005, its share of global production peaked at 98%, and although that figure has since declined, Beijing's monopoly over rare earth supply chains remains overwhelming. Numerous state-backed companies have attempted to enter the industry, but the barriers remain immense. Beijing influences prices to drive competitors out before they can even deliver their first shipment. And this dominance isn't just economic, it's political. In 2010, China halted rare earth exports to Japan following a sovereignty dispute in the East China Sea. The embargo sent shockwaves through global supply chains, forcing America, Japan, Australia, and others to reassess their dependence on Chinese rare earths. A more recent incident occurred in April 2025 during the trade war. After the White House raised tariffs on Chinese goods to 145%, Beijing retaliated by imposing export controls on 7 types of rare earths and magnets. Rare earths accounted for only a tiny share of China's exports to the US, so the move caused little economic pain at home but provoked an outcry from American manufacturers. So, immediately thereafter, 2 rounds of high-level negotiations followed, which led to a 90-day truce between Washington and Beijing. The point is, rare earths have become one of China's most powerful bargaining chips. The Pentagon, along with US defense contractors, has long recognized this vulnerability, even before the trade war brought it into focus. In 2024, a study by Rand Corporation warned that a rare earth supply disruption lasting just 90 days could shut down production lines at 78% of US defense contractors. This then recasts Trump's interest in Greenland and Canada. Both countries sit on vast reserves of rare earths. Greenland's Kvanefjeld region holds some of the world's richest deposits of heavy elements like dysprosium and terbium. In 2016, a semi-private Chinese firm called Shenghe acquired a stake there, but the project was later halted by Greenland's government over environmental concerns. Meanwhile, in Canada, the most promising sites are located in the northern and western regions, which are rich in neodymium and praseodymium. In recent years, Chinese state-owned companies have steadily expanded their involvement in Canada's rare earth sector. However, this has raised alarm bells in Washington, where Chinese influence over Canadian deposits is viewed as a security threat. Taken together, the cases of Canada and Greenland suggest that Trump's rhetoric, reckless as it may have been, was not mere impulse, but part of a broader effort to secure access to critical minerals. America has spent the past few years scrambling to tackle its dependency on Chinese rare earths. Most notably, the White House has invoked the Defense Production Act, a Cold War-era law, to fast-track domestic production of critical minerals for national security reasons by prioritizing such efforts and channeling new funding. At the center of this push is the Round Top Mountain in Texas, which holds an estimated 130,000 tons of rare earth reserves across 16 elements. It is being developed by USA Rare Earth and is expected to supply about one-fifth of US demand by 2027. To close the loop, the same company is also building a $100 million magnet plant in Stillwater, Oklahoma. There, the mined materials will be refined and turned into finished magnets, with a capacity of 2,000 tons per year and plans to scale up to nearly 5,000 tons. Federal funding is also on the rise. The 2025 National Defense Authorization Act set aside $1.2 billion to build a strategic reserve of rare earths for emergencies. This ensures the Pentagon has sufficient supplies in case imports are disrupted. Another $400 million has been allocated to support US companies developing mines, refineries, and magnet plants at home. These funds are being distributed among firms such as MP Materials, which operates the Mountain Pass mine in California, the only rare earths mine currently active in the United States. With Pentagon backing, MP is also set to build a rare earth magnet factory in Fort Worth, Texas. The US government has agreed to purchase its output and maintain a price floor, which would shield the company from market pressures. The deal stands as one of the clearest examples of state intervention. These programs and more are part of a broader push to rebuild the supply chain inside America. Yet, serious challenges remain. Chief among them is time. Rand estimates it will take the US at least a decade and between $10 and $15 billion to build a self-sufficient rare earth supply chain. This includes infrastructure investments, permitting processes, and workforce training. However, the environmental burden may prove just as daunting. Traditional rare earth mining and processing can devastate local ecosystems and often involve acidic solutions, heavy metals, and even radioactive waste. In the US, strict rules on waste disposal, water use, and emissions slow projects and raise costs. Unlike China, which has long tolerated the pollution, America faces a stark trade-off: how to secure critical minerals without abandoning its environmental standards. Nevertheless, cleaner methods are beginning to emerge. New techniques using biological solvents could cut waste by as much as 85%. The process would still be toxic and dangerous, but less than before. Further complicating matters is the social dimension. Many of the rare earth deposits in the Western Hemisphere are located on or near indigenous lands. Some of the US rare earth projects near Navajo and Apache lands have sparked protests and legal challenges. Addressing these issues will be a slow and complex process. In democratic societies, such debates are more transparent and tend to delay development, while authoritarian governments can simply sidestep them. In this sense, America's approach to rare earths is a litmus test for the kind of nation it will be in the decades ahead. But even if everything goes smoothly and all the complications are properly addressed, the outcome is far from guaranteed. Engineering new supply chains isn't just a question of finding a new mine. It requires entire ecosystems for refining, production, and downstream applications. What's more, while America's giving its best, Beijing too is moving full speed ahead. It is making inroads in Myanmar, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Tanzania, Congo, and Brazil. Last year, Beijing registered its highest number of overseas mining acquisitions in more than a decade. To catch up, the US will need more than just time and funding. It will require sustained political will and continuous investment. America's purse is deep, but money is not the problem. Commitment is. I've been your host, Shirvan, from Caspian Report. If you approve of what we do, please leave a comment, hit the like button, and mayhaps share the video. In any case, thank you for your time, and salam.